I'm Catherine, and I want to wish you a very, very good morning. On today's program, we're going to be hearing some audio clips, and the subject that we're going to be paying attention to is the hidden self and the need for us to discover, accept, and transform those aspects that undermine our sense of well-being. Because in truth, many of our states of discomfort, our illness, are rooted in emotional conflict, are rooted in maybe you could think of as emotional or psychological wounding. And in the first segment, we're going to be hearing from Gangaji, who is actually a very well-renowned spiritual teacher. And she's going to be speaking on your ally on the path of self-discovery. And it comes from her audio program, The Great Discovery. Many of Gangaji's students report that she seems to look directly into our hearts and minds, gently revealing unexamined thoughts and behaviors that are holding us back on the spiritual journey. Gangaji has special gifts for allowing you to see your true potential and recognize that it is within your reach at this very moment. And this particular selection shows how we can turn our pain and dissatisfaction into our greatest ally for growth and transformation. Also, we'll hear from Brené Brown on the journey to worthiness. And She says, a trustworthy guide can make all the difference when we are facing the more difficult parts of our human journey. And this comes from her audio course, Men, Women, and Worthiness. And Brené Brown is a teacher who immediately created that all-important bond of trust. This is what is said about her. Brené has a clear, simple style that makes people feel like they're sitting across the table from a dear friend. And because of this presence she brings, she has a gift for helping people navigate the difficult experiences of shame and vulnerability. And that is what we're going to be looking at in this particular part of the segment. And finally, in this first part of the program, we're going to be hearing from Kristen Neff. And she'll be speaking on what is self-compassion and why is it important. And the reason is that many of us are very tough on ourselves, and we feel a genuine desire to feel compassion for others, but we're afraid that if we begin to feel the same compassion for ourselves, that we become self-centered, soft, or even stop thinking about others. But of course, this isn't true. And one of the most important things for us to remember is that self-compassion is one of the best things we could do for ourselves on our path towards healing. And in this segment, Kristen gives us a little example of how we can recognize the difference between being self-compassionate and not. And it comes from her program, Self-Compassion Step by Step. So we're going to go now to this audio clip, and then I will be back in a few moments to pull it all together for you.
The biggest ally you have on your path of true self-discovery is your dissatisfaction. It's what we most want to get rid of, and at times it can be quite painful. But if you will use it as a Dharma bell, as a call to some place that is still saying no or not enough or this is not right, if you will, instead of withdrawing from it or fighting it or even moving toward it and making multiple changes again, if you will actually open to it and find the root of this dissatisfaction, the pain of dissatisfaction, of living a life that is not complete, it's most likely that you will find some sense of an abyss. Or maybe a sense of hopelessness, or a sense of futility, or it could be even worthlessness. The invitation with inquiry is to really recognize whatever state appears, as well as what's under that. So that dissatisfaction is the top. It may be a slight irritation, and our habit may be to blame ourselves or to blame another, to blame the world or our parents or the government or climate change. If we are just willing for a moment to not blame anybody, including ourselves, we can actually allow that dissatisfaction to point us into an area that perhaps we have spent much of our life trying to escape. And we can stop trying to escape. We can meet it. It's meeting death. And we are afraid to meet that. We are afraid that if we meet it, it will overcome us. And in that fear, we give it great power. And then we live our lives on top of it. But I'm suggesting that you can turn toward it, suspending all self or other judgment, and simply open to it. For me in my life, it meant simply telling the truth. First, in my first marriage, I had to finally tell the truth to my husband that I wasn't in love with him. The marriage wasn't working. And this was a painful truth. It was painful to him. It was painful to our daughter. And I felt deeply ashamed at causing that pain and at my own ambition for happiness that had been the setup for that pain. But I finally had to tell the truth. And that was just the tip. That was a deeper truth. And finally, it reveals this. What has been called the existential condition of being human. And to whatever degree this human feels separate from its ground of being, the source that has given life to this fragile, temporary form, there is despair. But in being willing to open to that despair, there is a revelation of what cannot be separate from the ground, what has never been separate, what is still here, what is still feeding this body, these emotions, this person, this individual consciousness, this universal consciousness. It's the beloved waiting for the return of attention. We spend our lives spending attention. That's what we have. We have attention. And at different phases, it's put on different things. But now, in this moment, your attention can be put back to the origin of yourself, the origin of any emotion, any state, and where each emotion, each state, each thought ends up. So both the beginning and the end, and that's the completion, that's the wholeness, that's who you are. And regardless of how you define yourself, where you find yourself in life's many plays and roles, that's here, waiting for you.
I think in the last 12 years, my work on shame and worthiness and courage, vulnerability, fear has taught me the importance of having a conversation about these topics. As I think about what it means to make this journey from, I don't believe I'm good enough, I don't believe I'm powerful enough, beautiful enough, thin enough, important enough, loved enough, to make that journey from that place of struggle, a place, you know, and it's not a one-time journey. I mean, I can be dropped into that any moment of any day. But to make that journey from the place of struggle to the place of being enough, of really believing, and I would dare say knowing, not just believing, but knowing, because I think it's truth, that who we are is enough, and that what we contribute and what we have to bring to our relationships in our lives is more than enough. To make that journey, we're going to have to wade through the marshlands. We're going to have to walk through the swamp that is shame. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't set out to study shame. And if I thought there was a way to I am enough that involved skirting around that area, I would have done it myself and I would be a huge advocate of it. But there's not. The whole idea, it's the Jungian concept of shame being the swampland of the soul. We have to walk through it and we have to understand how it works. And I think so many of us spend years standing in the quicksand on the side of that swamp, thinking how horrible it would be to go in it and really open up this idea of what is shame and how is it operating in my life and what kind of havoc is it wreaking? That's too painful. When the truth is that standing in the marsh, sinking a little bit all the time is a much slower, more painful way to go. And so the invitation is, let's get into this together. Let's figure out how shame works and let's meet the gremlins. Let's meet the little shame monsters that live in this swamp who are so quick to whisper in our ear that we're not good enough and that, you know, we don't know what we're doing. And let's talk about what that means as women and men and as people, because it's different for all of us. Qualities that shame has that are just connected to our humanity. But there are some messages and expectations that are absolutely gender specific. They are driven and organized by gender. And if you're thinking to yourself, you know, maybe this is interesting, maybe it's not, I'm not sure that shame applies to me, what I would tell you is that the shame gremlins show up in our lives in a lot of different ways. I'm thinking back to an email that I received from a woman who I was going to do an online program on my blog around shame, and she sent me an email that said, I love your work, not so much interested in the shame thing, that doesn't apply, but if you ever do anything on perfectionism, let me know. And I emailed her back and said, shame is the birthplace of perfectionism. It's where perfectionism comes from. And she emailed back and said, I had no idea. My friends and I all really struggle with perfectionism, but we don't claim shame. And I love that idea of not claiming shame because, unfortunately, I hate to start with kind of an ultimatum, but what I have found to be true is that if we don't claim shame, it claims us. You know, if we can't say, yeah, I get what it feels like to be not enough and I want something different in my life, that we create this incredible operating system for shame because it just hates us talking about it. I have men who tell me often, I don't think I have any shame issues, but man, do I have some rage problems, you know? And what I'll talk about is that when it comes to shame, what I've learned from interviewing hundreds and hundreds of men is that men have two switches when it comes to shame. Pissed off, shut down. We're going to do some swamp slushing and we're going to talk about what it is, but we're also going to talk about shame resilience. And that is on the other side of that swamp, once we're willing to walk through it, take a look around, meet the gremlins, figure out how to deal with them, is the opportunity to live a life without playing small, to step into who we are, to build the kind of relationships that we want to build. And it's not about quick tips and easy answers, because I don't really subscribe to that. It's an unfolding, and it's about learning and knowing and talking. And again, I'm just really excited to be with you on this journey.
Have an experience of compassion for another person, what goes on? What are the elements that comprise this compassionate experience? Well, the first is actually that you have to notice that suffering is occurring. So let's say you are walking to work down the street and there is a homeless woman sitting on the sidewalk who obviously looks like she's had a tough time. Well, many days you might just walk past her, not even notice her on your way to work because you're in a rush, you're busy. But one day, for whatever reason, you do notice her, and you notice that she's really struggling. And then the next response, if it's a compassionate one and not an irritated one, is that your heart goes out to her. You have some emotional response to her pain. Wow. Poor thing, that must be so hard. I wonder what her story is. And then importantly, there's another element to compassion that shouldn't be overlooked, and that is recognition of her humanity and your humanity, and that we are all vulnerable. So not pitying the woman, looking down on her, but remembering, there but for the grace of God go I. We are all potentially capable of finding ourselves in a situation like that. So I define self-compassion as having those same three elements. So the first one, the most obvious one, is this idea of being kind, emotionally responsive to your own suffering. Sadly, most of us are not kind to ourselves. Most of us are very judgmental of ourselves, very hard on ourselves, critical. In fact, if you were to stop and check in and think about what did you just say to yourself right there when you made this mistake or you failed in some way, and then you consider, would I say that to someone I cared about, to a friend? Even more, would I say that to a total stranger? And more often than not, the answer is no. We speak more harshly and even cruelly to ourselves than usually anyone else in our lives. So not only does that cause a lot of pain, it also takes away this great coping mechanism we have, which is our ability to soothe and comfort ourselves. So with self-kindness, we actively treat ourselves with care and understanding rather than harsh self-judgment. We treat ourselves like we would a good friend. We're there for ourselves when needed. The second element of self-compassion is this feeling of common humanity, recognizing that our imperfection, the fact that we fail and make mistakes, the fact that we suffer in life, this is part of the shared human experience, something that we all go through. And this is important because often what happens when we notice something about ourselves that we don't like or something difficult happens in our life, we feel like something has gone wrong. This is abnormal in some ways. I didn't sign up for this plan. I want a refund, please. But of course, nothing has gone wrong. Nothing is abnormal. It's normal to be imperfect. It's normal for your life to be imperfect. This is the plan we all signed up for. And when you can remember that, you can actually feel more connected to your fellow humans when things go wrong, as opposed to feeling isolated. And isolation is the more common experience when we feel inadequate in some way. So the third component of self-compassion is mindfulness. So what is mindfulness? Mindfulness entails turning toward painful emotions and being willing to sit with them, to be with them, to not immediately try to change them. So we need mindfulness to be able to notice when we're suffering. If we're trying to avoid our suffering or fight against it and resist it, we can't open to it. Just like that homeless woman on the side of the street, we have to be willing to look at her and say, wow, she's really hurting. We have to be able to do that for ourselves as well. Now, on the other hand, we don't want to exaggerate the pain either, to run away with a dramatic storyline of how bad things are. Mindfulness sees our situation just as it is, no more and no less. Now you may think, well, yeah, I'm pretty tuned into my suffering, that's not a problem there. But is that true? When we're lost in the role of self-critic, we are often completely consumed by that role and don't even stop to realize the incredible pain we're causing ourselves. Or even if our pain isn't coming from our own self-criticism, but is instead due to some very difficult situation, like maybe you get into a car accident, for instance, we typically go straight into problem-solving mode in those situations, you know, making phone calls, what do I have to do? How do I fix this? Without first stopping to pause and say, whew, that was really difficult. I'm struggling with this emotionally right now. Now, could you imagine if you had a friend who came to you and said something like, I've just wrecked my car? What's the first thing you would do? Probably give her a hug, right? That's usually our natural response to other people to comfort them when they're hurting. But it's not the case with ourselves, often because we aren't even tuned in to our own suffering. So I'd like to lead you through a little exercise to get a sense of what self-compassion feels like and also what the lack of self-compassion feels like. So I'd like you to put your hands in front of you and clench your fists really hard. Okay, have them be tight. Just hold that there for a few seconds. And as your fists are clenched, what do you feel? Are there any emotions coming up? What does this evoke for you? And then release your fists and open your hands so your palms are facing upward. And feel that. What shifts? What's coming up now? And then place one hand on top of the other and bring them firmly and yet gently over the center of your chest. feel the warmth of your hands, your chest rising and falling beneath them. Just feel it. What does that evoke for you? And so the first posture, when we clenched our fist, was a good metaphor for what self-criticism feels like. It feels stressful, it feels painful, it feels uncomfortable, it feels tight and rigid. And that's our attitude toward ourselves when we criticize ourselves, especially harshly. When we beat ourselves up, you might say, with those clenched fists. And then when we open our hands, most people feel a great sense of relief, of freedom, of spaciousness. And that's a very good metaphor for mindfulness. We're just allowing things to be as they are. And then when we put both hands over our heart, it usually feels pretty damn good. It feels comforting, it feels warm, it feels caring, it feels tender. And that's what self-kindness feels like. Giving ourselves what we really want and what we really need.
And you were just listening to a composite segment that featured three different spiritual teachers, healers. And we heard from Gangaji, and she spoke on your ally on the path of self-discovery. And we heard from Brené Brown, who spoke on the journey to worthiness. And that final speaker was Christine Neff on what is self-compassion and why is it important. Now, all three of these segments, if you wanted to have them for yourself, of course, you could go to prn.fm and download the program, and you would have that. Heart of Mind Radio is the name of this program. But you could also check out these and many, many more segments like these at the website soundstrue.com. And I chose these particular speakers because they resonated very deeply with the work that I do in my own life and also with the work that I do with people in my practice. And I find that one of the most important barriers to walk through is the one that Kristen spoke of on having self-compassion and being kind and being able to really treat yourself with a level of gentleness as you walk through some of the challenges of your healing journey. And the part of that journey, of course, is looking at those parts of ourself, that inner voice that torments us. And what Brené Brown suggests is that a lot of these tormenting voices, at the root of them, or the sense of not being good enough, not being worthy enough, holding on to or being given that message. And with Gangaji, of course, she starts out with the whole picture in the path of self-discovery, that we truly are able to meet ourselves, to understand ourselves, and to be who we truly are when we take that journey inward and look at those things that are causing us pain. So it's really a journey. And one of the important parts of the work that I do is regarding our physical body, our emotional body, our psychological state as a almost like a message of our journey. And in the Native American tradition, we can use our healing journey as a vision quest, We're going to be listening to a few more segments and talking more about the personal vision quest. When we come back in just a few moments, we're going to take a break and have some station announcements, and then I'll be back to continue with this morning's program. So please do stay tuned.
Stay tuned for more cutting-edge viewpoints on PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Sandy Leon Best, host of Political Analysis. Welcome to the 21st century, where the corporate propaganda machine works 24/7 to manufacture your reality. Every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, Political Analysis challenges the corporate narrative with independent news, analysis, and passionate conversations on the most critical issues of our time. Don't let the corporate echo machine become your truth. Tune in live to Political Analysis or visit the archives at prn.fm. If you like the show, rate us in iTunes. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you are coming with us.
Hi, this is Paul Cavalcante, host of The Vinyl Experience, and you're listening to PRN, your source for the best in progressive conversation, news, and entertainment.
Welcome back. You're listening to Heart of Mind Radio over the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. I'm Catherine Davis, your host of today's program. And we're going to be going a little bit deeper into this exploration of our healing journey. And in this segment, we're going to be hearing from Louis Mail Madrona. And his talk is Who is Part of You and how the understanding of Native culture will shift how one understands the healing process. In Western medicine, healing is about addressing problems in the body or mind. In Native American medicine, it is our story that we must learn to heal. This is the underlying premise of what Dr. Louis Mail Madrona calls narrative medicine, and it comes from his program, The Spirit of Healing. And he talks about the relational self and how the stories we tell our friends, colleagues, and family influence our ability to heal. And he talks about how modern psychiatry and medicine look like if they had been invented, what it would look like, excuse me, if they had been invented by Native American people. So this is very, very interesting. And Louis Mail Madrona is deeply connected to his Cherokee and Lakota roots, and he's also a psychiatrist and Stanford-trained MD. So he has a broad perspective on what he's sharing. And following that, we're going to hear from Mao Xing Ni on what is qi and how can we understand yin and yang. So this is another cultural perspective. Westerners who first encountered the concept of qi often regarded it as something extraordinary, even supernatural, an energy available only to masters of spirituality or martial arts. Yet much of traditional Chinese medicine is based on understanding of this vital life force as it operates in each and every one of us. And from his program, Qi Meditation, Dr. Mao Xing Ni was able to demystify Qi and explain it in clear, simple language. And in this particular selection, he explores the nature of Qi and how it manifests as yin and yang, and how these energies are reflected in our bodies and in our world. So we looked in our first segment at emotions and the inner voice and what we might be holding inside of ourselves. And now we expand that out a little bit more with the Native American perspective and looking at how the whole narrative we tell ourselves has an impact on our wellness and we shift to the traditional Chinese medicine understanding of the influences of balance of energies in the cosmos. So all of these play a role in how our wellness or dis-ease unfolds. So stay tuned, and we'll be back in just a moment, and I'll begin to tie these segments in for you.
This concept of relational self is at first really difficult to grasp because we're so trained in Western culture, in contemporary American society. We're so trained to think of ourselves as solid individuals and to think of ourselves as having firm boundaries between us and others. And this Lakota concept, which is similar in other tribes, but I've mostly studied it for Lakota, this Lakota concept tells us that the boundaries between us are fluid and that the minute we begin talking and sharing stories with each other, that some of your Nagi becomes part of my Nagi, and some of my Nagi becomes part of your Nagi, and we're forever joined. You're forever in my Nagi, and I'm forever in your Nagi. And when we walk away from each other, we can't ever really be truly separate again. And so, from now on, there's no rigid boundary between us. And that's the nature of relationship in the Native American world, that it's unending. Relationship can't be terminated. That whether we're in contact or not, we're still relating because you're still a part of me. So I'd like to invite you to imagine, who is a part of you? Who formed you? Who are the beings that led to your existence today? Usually people name their parents, of course, and often their grandparents, and often their siblings. But what about important mentors or teachers? For many people, their spiritual teachers are very important, and even historical spiritual figures. I named Christ and I named Buddha. There could be Muhammad. We can include Abraham, Isaac. The list is endless. For Lakota people, we would have the white buffalo calf woman. We would have the sun, the moon. We would have the clouds. We would have the various sacred beings that roam the earth, the spirit of the buffalo, the chief of the buffalo spirits. We would have the guardians of the four directions. All of these beings and the stories about them form us, make us who we are, and are inseparable from us. We can't tear them away from us. And so you might want to make a list. You could even make a drawing, and there's something called an ecogram in which you draw all of the influences on you today. Some of them are from the past, some of them are from the present. You make thicker lines for the more important influences. You regulate the distance from things that are in the past and things that are in the present. You draw squiggly red lines for conflictual influences. And you can begin to have a diagram of your Nagi, a diagram of all of the things that are making you who you are today. And by doing that exercise, we come to understand that we're not individuals, that we may have separate bodies, but our minds are shared. Because the stories that create us are shared. They came from other beings who formed us. My project has been to transform medicine and psychology through the wisdom of indigenous North America. I've been asking the question, what would medicine look like if it had been invented by Native people? What would psychology look like if it had been invented and were practiced by Native people? How would it be different? And the most important difference is we would understand that story is the basic unit of psychology and medicine, because everything humans do is done in the form of a story or a narrative. All of the knowledge that we have is embedded in a story about how to use that knowledge and what it's good for. All of our relationships are managed through telling and remembering stories and being told stories. In fact, neuroscientists are finding that the default mode of our brain is to tell and recall stories. Stories light up more areas of our brain than anything else. And in fact, when our brain is on idle, when our brain is just resting, what we tend to do is to make up stories. We run simulations about, well, let's see, tonight when I go home, I'm going to walk in the door and here's who's going to be there, and my wife is a little bit angry with me, so how should I approach that? Maybe I should bring home flowers on the way, and I'll run a story of me coming in the door with flowers, and then I'll run a story of me coming in the door without flowers, and that will help me make a decision whether flowers are cost-effective or not, the difference between those two simulations. And my emotional brain, my autonomic nervous system, is monitoring those stories and giving me feedback about which ones feel better. So this is how our brain works, is through story. And stories are really the social neurotransmitters of our networks. Stories are how we communicate information from me to you and you to me and all around the network, all around the community. So story is the most powerful basic unit of information. And in terms of psychology, it makes a lot more sense to talk about defective stories than it does to talk about defective people. And so instead of saying to someone, oh, I got anxiety disorder, that's what makes me so miserable, a more productive thing is to say, I'm living stories that make me worry more than I need to. Help me to change those stories so I don't have to worry as much. And that's part of what we'll be trying to accomplish in the exercises, is to help you to become aware of the stories that you're living by so that you can change those stories with the help of other people.
Let's discuss chi, energy, life force, vitality. To gain mastery over our lives and achieve optimal health, it is necessary to have a basic understanding of the nature of energy. Vital energy, life force, or chi, as the ancient Chinese refer to it, is formless, yet it is the subtle breath of the life that permeates and vitalizes the universe. Energy envelops us and fills us, just like a fish is unaware of the fact that it lives in water. We are unaware of the inexhaustible sea of energy that supports our lives. The sun is an obvious expression of this energy. It provides fuel for plant life. It activates biological clocks in humans and other organisms, and its energy can even be converted into electricity for use in our homes and offices. How brilliant! Think about that for a second. We're just surrounded by this solar energy. But most of the energy around us is imperceptible. That's why we call it subtle energy. Qi activates and maintains all life. Subtle energy gives birth to life. Everything that exists is an expression or projection of that energy in varying states or frequencies. So here, let me share with you a quote from my book, Secrets of Self-Healing. This is a traditional understanding of qi, and I think it really describes energy in a very eloquent way that covers sort of the whole philosophical understanding of what qi is. When qi gathers, it is called matter. When qi diffuses, it is called space. When qi animates form, it is called life. When qi separates and withdraws from form, it is called death. When qi flows, there is health. When qi is blocked, there is sickness and disease. Qi embraces all things, circulates through them, and sustains them. The planet depends on it for their light and motion. Weather is formed by it, and seasons are caused by it. Qi activates and maintains all life. But what is this qi? You know, it sounds so elusive. The good news is we can actually measure qi. We can now record and measure subtle energy. For instance, an electroencephalogram, EEG, records noise from brain waves that transmit signals from brain cells to tissues. Qi is informational. In other words, it carries a specific signal or message similar to how voices and data are carried by electrical currents through copper wires or by bursts of light through fiber optic cables. Our bodies are absorptive, reflective, and generative of this informational energy fields. For example, studies show that when a medical Qigong practitioner is emitting energy towards a subject, there is a consistent shift of EEG brainwave patterns to the alpha state, which is the healing and resting state in the subject. Studies show that meditation causes similar changes in the brainwaves. Qi energy can be understood also as polarity. It has two sides to it. We call it yin and yang. Ancient Chinese sage observed the cyclical phases of energy evolution and movement as the combination of two distinctly opposite yet complementary energy states called yin and yang. The yin and yang polarity system provides a basis for all phenomena in nature, and certainly modern physics has proven this to be true. Take the example of an atom. It has a positively charged core called proton and a negatively charged outer layer of electron. It is the opposite forces that binds them together, creating the atom. In fact, if the tendency of the electrons to propel themselves away from the nucleus were not counterbalanced by the attractive forces of the protons, the atom would simply disintegrate. And since the atom compose matter, the world that we know of it would not exist. On a much larger scale, this principle functions to hold together our solar system and the billions of galaxies in the universe. There is no facet of life to which the forces of yin and yang do not apply. For example, I use the principle of restoring yin-yang balance to help my patients with thyroid conditions. In the case of hypothyroidism, there is an excess yin, and in hyperthyroidism, there is an excess of yang. In this case, healing and wellness is about reducing the excess so that there is a balance of yin and yang. Allow me to share with you some yin and yang correspondences for some of you who are hearing this for the first time. Yin corresponds to moon, yang corresponds to the sun. Earth corresponds to yin, and heaven corresponds to yang. Form and function are yin and yang correspondences. Similarly, dark corresponds to yin, and light corresponds to yang. So we go down the list, and yin represents deficient, depressed states, night, feminine, contraction, cold, interior, slow, water, autumn, winter seasons, for example, whereas yang corresponds to excess. Again, it's opposite, right? To deficient, manic, to depression, day, to night, masculine to the feminine, expansion to contraction, hot versus cold. Yang also means exterior versus the interior that corresponds to yin. It's fast versus slow, fire, water, and movement, quiescence, and finally spring and summer versus autumn and winter. So as you can see, it's opposite. Right? Both yin and yang. However, they depend on each other. They're relative to one another. So they depend on each other for definition. So this is how the world can be pretty much categorized. All the phenomena in the world belongs to these two polar and yet complementary energies. Yin and yang are akin to a scale. Take this simple example of body temperature. When you're cold, there is an imbalance tipping the scale towards yin. Your instinctive reaction is to warm up by, say, increase circulation via exercise. Movement is an expression of yang. Likewise, when your body is hot or feverish, cooling it off by drinking cold water, using an ice pack, or inducing perspiration will recalibrate the yin and yang scale from a yang-heavy imbalance to a balance between the two poles.
And that was our second segment, in which we expanded our perspective to look at cultural viewpoints. And we heard first from Luis Mel Madrona, who talks about the native perspective and what he calls narrative medicine, understanding the whole story that we repeat to ourselves and how that story impacts on our health. And we also heard from Mao Xing Ni on what is qi and how to understand yin and yang. And this really speaks of the underlying force of energy that is the manifestation of all that we know as the existing visible world, and the consciousness internally to that visible world would be considered the yin and the yang of qi. And from the perspective of traditional Chinese medicine, we look at the balance of this excess or depletion, the yin and the yang, within our body systems. And this would also be true within the emotional systems and in the mind, the mental systems. So this gives us a really vast array of potentials for approaching the process of transformative healing. And I chose these many different perspectives because I believe that they all come together in the healing journey. And it's really important as you embark upon this healing journey that we do it from a perspective of caring, compassion, and love for ourselves so that we can move through whatever challenges may be there and then be able to heal those challenges through understanding and compassion and applying some rebalancing factor. So in the case of yin and yang and of or qi or qigong, it's a matter of breathing and removing excess energy or lifting energy. From the perspective of the indigenous cultures, it's about looking at the narrative, looking at the story, or viewing your journey as itself a vision quest in which you're going to find different challenges along the way. And our earlier speakers were speaking more about really coming to terms with the fact that these challenges are really your allies, as Gangaji would say, that help us on our path of self-discovery. And they're there with a purposeful meaning should we choose to engage it and pass through that valley. And part of that process of passing through is to discover those little parts in our being that would cause us to feel less than or worthless, as Rene Brown would say. And so I think that it all comes together in an understanding that when our lives present ourselves with challenges, and this happens with everyone, it could be emotional, it could be physical, it could be psychological. We all come upon times when the world feels very challenging, when our lives feel very challenging. And it's really important that we respect that and we travel along that path so that we can uncover and lift that burden from our lives. And this is true, I would say, as well with our financial lives, our relationships. It's really important to understand that we are divine human beings, and anything that may be going on that challenges or takes that memory from us is to understand that this is a challenge for me to walk through, for me to cultivate within myself an understanding so that I can liberate myself from this sense of pain that I'm experiencing. And one of the things that we'll be doing on this program as we go forward is really looking at this journey, the personal vision quest, and what tools we can use both at home as well as through perhaps lectures and workshops or through individual consults, if that would be the answer. But I think that there are many things that we can do for ourselves once we begin to interpret the message that's before us and be able to identify what can be changed, or to be able to identify what tools we need to make a transformative change. So I want to invite you to really stay tuned to this program. It's Heart of Mind Radio, and you're listening to the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. And for those of you who would like to find out more about some of the upcoming programs that you might be able to engage in yourself, please do make contact with me. Again, I'm Catherine Davis. And you can leave a phone message at 347-480-1694. If you'd like to email, please send your emails to heartofmindradio@gmail.com, heartofmindradio@gmail.com. And if you want to find out more about healing and actually going through the process of this transformation, as we heard in the program today, you can check out the website that I've provided for you. It's qigongonline.net, and that's spelled with a Q. Qigong is spelled with a Q. So it's QIGONGONLINE.net, QigongOnline.net. And you'll actually find meditations there as well as a real explanation on how you can make this transformation. So please do stay tuned. Coming up will be some great programming here over the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm Catherine Davis. My number again is 347-480-1694. And I want you to stay tuned to PRN.FM for more fabulous programming. And tune in again on Friday morning at 10 a.m. for Heart of Mind Radio. Bye for now.